It's off to Leonard, defended by Simmons. Is this the dagger?
Happy anniversary, Kawhi Leonard. Exactly 1 year ago today, the greatest shot in Raptors history, arguably the greatest shot in NBA postseason history, the one seminal moment that forever changed the narrative of basketball in Toronto. I'm Mike Adams alongside Scott Rafferty, Alex Novick, and guys, as we're recording right now, I'm pretty sure the ball is still hanging on the rim at Scotiabank Arena.
It was an absolutely wild shot, and I feel like millions of people watching it were just holding their breath as it started bouncing around.
Voted on NBA.com by the fans as the greatest shot of all time. Is that correct?
It is. I think that's probably a little hot. I don't know if, looking back on it, maybe not the best selection there. What do you guys think?
Well, you ranked it fourth, right, going into that in that bracket?
I did. I seeded.
So either way, it's still top five or something.
Yeah, which I think is fine. I think people it might be the most dramatic game winner ever. But it's not like better than Jordan's shot to beat the Jazz or the shot over Craig Elo or I don't know. Ray Allen corner three. It's a bigger shot, right?
Yeah, the three that jump out to me are Kyrie's in the NBA Finals for the Cavs to win. Jordan shot over Russell, and then yeah. Ray Allen's in the corner. Those are the three that jump out to mind immediately that I think are probably better, but those were also all in the finals, so that obviously adds a little bit more.
I was going to say that we shouldn't exactly start off the conversation by downplaying what is the greatest moment in Raptors history, short of them winning a title, but it's kind of what we're going to do today. We're going to talk about all the things that maybe would have happened had the shot not gone in. So what if Kawhi Leonard misses the shot over the outstretched arms of Joel Embiid? We go to overtime. We're going to talk about what happens the rest of that game. Who would have won the title? What would have happened the offseason? What would be happening right now with the Toronto Raptors? There's so many things that kind of come into play here with a domino effect that really does stretch coast to coast around the entire league. But just first things off, looking back at the shot itself, what is the kind of big takeaway thought or the first thing that you remember when you think about the shot actually going in before we kind of veer off into fantasy land?
I just remember working that night. It was me and Gilbert McGregor. We were obviously watching the game live. We were live blogging it. We were waiting to obviously the outcome of the game to be able to publish post-game stuff out of it. Cause either way, there was going to be someone moving on to the next round with it being a game seven. And I remember just both of us standing up when the Raptors inbounded that ball to Kawhi, and we were both just had nothing to say. We were both speechless as the ball was bouncing around, and then we both just lost our minds when it went in because it was just the moment. It was just an absolutely incredible shot and an incredible moment.
Yeah, it was, and as all of us work for NBA.com Canada, our traffic and our livelihoods are tied to how well the Raptors do and how far they go in the playoffs. So them winning that game and having a whole nother series of great traffic for us made everyone very happy. I don't think I've ever jumped or cheered any higher for a shot of any team I've ever rooted for than at that moment.
I spilled popcorn all over our living room jumping off the couch as that went in. And my wife ran in from the next room having no idea what happened and thought something had gone horribly wrong. But as you said, traffic was business was booming. That was a great night for NBA Canada. All right, so let's just say that Kawhi's shot doesn't go in. Four bounces on the rim. It goes off the other way. We go to overtime. Does anything change? How does that game itself play out differently if Kawhi's shot doesn't drop?
So we just had a discussion about this on NBA.com, and I think, Micah, you and Colin Gay said that you think that the Raptors would still have won, and I was the only one to say that I actually think the 76ers would have won, just because I think the Raptors and Kawhi specifically were exhausted going into that what would have been overtime. Because it's easy to forget, Kawhi attempted 39 field goals in that game, which was the most by a player in a game seven since 1962. He was their offense. It was basically just him and Serge Ibaka. everyone else, the five other Raptors who took the floor, were just not very good in that game. So it was basically going to be all on Kawhi to carry them in the overtime. And Ibaka even said it in an oral history that I think was on TSN. He said that they were just too tired to go into overtime. So he was just so glad to see that go in because he just doesn't think they would have won. So I do think the 76ers, especially when you consider like momentum was in Philly's favor going into what would have been overtime, I think. I ultimately do think the 76ers would have beaten them.
You're a big stats guy and you're going to come in here and lean on the faulty premise of momentum, which is not a real thing.
I even had, I thought the Raptors were going to win in like five, I want to say, maybe in that series. Like, I was confident they were the significantly better team. I just think given that moment and everything, I thought that, yeah, momentum was in Philly's favor. The way that they played in that fourth quarter, the way Jimmy Butler played in that fourth quarter, I can't remember exactly how many points he had, but I know he scored double figures in that fourth quarter, obviously had that big layup in transition to tie the game up and everything like that. I just felt better about how they were playing going into the overtime because, again, the Raptors, it was basically all Kawhi, and like Ibaka said, he was just absolutely exhausted.
Yeah, Scott, I think you nailed it when you talk about how tired Kawhi and the rest of the Raptors were. I mean, you look at Kawhi coming up short on the foul shot when they were up two with 10.8 seconds left, and you know, think of the narrative if they lose the game after he missed that foul shot, but that's behind the point, besides the point. Jimmy Butler grabs the ball and just beats every other Raptor down the court for a game-tying layup with 4 seconds left. And Ibaka, you mentioned his quote, he's the guy trailing who tries to swat the ball and can't. So I think the Raptors, just by that play alone, were clearly pretty tired at that point. And that play just sucked all the air out of the building. I mean, I remember watching it. I was pretty sure the Raptors were going to lose in overtime after that play. It really was a gut punch. I think the fans felt it. I think the players felt it. And I don't think the Raptors were going to pull it out.
That Jimmy Butler, it's funny because so when Kawhi makes that shot, it's just the second time in NBA history that in a winner-take-all game, a player hits a game winner at the buzzer to win it. The only other one that ever happened was when Michael Jordan hit the shot over Craig Elo. And, you know, we're watching The Last Dance right now and are reminded of the fact that just before Jordan hits that shot, Craig Elo himself scores to put the Cavs ahead. So it's like Jimmy Butler is kind of recreating a little bit. It's sort of like his version of the forgotten Craig Elo shot, just the one that nobody else talks about. I'm of the opinion that the Raptors still would have won. I understand the whole everyone's tired and Kawhi, like not only did he miss that free throw, he missed a 9-foot pull-up jumper. He missed a three in that final minute as well. But like Joel Embiid is not exactly a modicum of endurance either. He was just 6 of 18 from the floor that entire game. Played the entire second half, all but 65 seconds. Was also, let's get real nerdy for a minute. According to all the player tracking, the slowest moving player on the floor in that game was Joel Embiid. Slower than even Marcus Gasol and his old tired legs. Ben Simmons was a complete joke the entire second half of that game. And, you know, with the exception of that Jimmy Butler shot, the only other points that Philly had that didn't come at the free throw line was this crazy running off-balance J.J. Redick, like, desperation jump shot. They couldn't exactly score either. So, I don't know. I feel like Kawhi would have found a way. They were a team of destiny. They would have won no matter what. However, let's, for the sake of argument, say that you guys are right and that this game goes to overtime. The Raptors end up losing. They obviously do not win the NBA title. Who does win the NBA title if Kawhi's shot doesn't drop?
I kind of think it's the Bucks. I do, because I think a team coming out of the East beats the Warriors based on how banged up they were, right? I think we can probably all agree on that. Are you guys on the same page?
I mean, it's tough to say because, yeah, if Klay Thompson suffers the same injury, then sure. But who knows what happens if they're playing a different team, different stuff going on the court, and who knows if he still tears his ACL in game five, so, or game six, sorry. So I don't know. If it's full strength, full strength minus Kevin Durant, I think Warriors could have given the Bucks a very tough series and probably have won.
I'm gonna go with Alex. I weirdly think Golden State would have found a way. Like, We're one missed Steph Curry wide open three at the end of game six to going to a game seven against a Toronto team. And the one thing that like Golden State had, they just had no answer for the depth of Toronto. Like the story of that final series was just like guy after guy stepping up. And it's just like, there's five dudes on the floor and they can't compete with the depth. Like, I don't know if Philly or Milwaukee would have done that in the same way that Toronto did. I don't know. I weirdly think it still would have been Golden State there. But you know, we'll never know. But that's one of the fun things. So aside from the actual winner and NBA title holder, there's a whole lot else that would have gone down differently, right? Like, let's just say, for example, the Sixers win the NBA title. There's no way that Jimmy Butler right now is a member of the Miami Heat.
You wouldn't think so.
You disagree.
You would? No, I mean, I thought about that. That was the big one to me, because I think, Alex, you were saying when we were talking about this idea as a podcast, you threw out some, or maybe it was you, Mike, I can't remember, but you threw out some names either way of guys who moved in the offseason and how, if Kawhi's shot doesn't go down, maybe that changes some of those players going to different places. I still think Kawhi's definitely going back to LA, right? If he misses his shot and the Raptors don't win. Russ, I think, still gets traded for Chris Paul to Houston. I don't think that changes anything, in which case the Thunder still trade Paul George to LA. So I don't think any of that changes. But I do think Butler is the big one, because based on some of the stuff that he said, it kind of makes it seem like he was never going to come back to Philly. But at the same time, it is hard to believe that if they had won the championship, and I realize I'm saying this after Kawhi led the Raptors to a championship and then left in free agency, but it would be kind of weird for him to lead the 76ers to a championship and then leave, to me.
Yeah, I think he stays. I think he stays. Philly, knowing how that city embraces anyone who wins anything for them, even if they got to the finals, it would have been such a love fest, and I'd confidently say he would have stayed in Philly, and then they wouldn't have signed Al Horford, obviously, so that's another domino that that falls differently. But yeah, Butler probably stays. I disagree, though, that it's a guarantee that Kawhi leaves either way and goes to LA. So if he still has something to prove and he's not feeling himself as much and comes back to the Raptors, then that's when things could have gone really crazy. So I don't know if Micah, you want to segue into those dominoes that could have fallen, because it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, I think that there's a world too where, like, you know, one of the reasons that Kawhi goes to the Clippers is because he knows that Paul George is going with him to the Clippers. But like, does Paul George go with Kawhi and hitch his wagon to Kawhi if he's not going on the heels of a title? So like, if Kawhi ends up staying, let's play out the game of what if Kawhi loses and just decides to stay in Toronto. Alex, you seem to think that that's maybe not likely, but perhaps more likely than not. Like, what are some of the other ramifications in your head of the dominoes that then fall if Kawhi decides, you know what, unfinished business, I'm signing back for a one-year deal in Toronto?
Yeah, I mean, Scott's kind of stole the thunder already, but it's, you think that PG doesn't get traded to the Clippers, which means Russ probably stays with the Thunder, which means Chris Paul stays with the Rockets, or the Rockets move him for someone else, because it seemed like that relationship was probably going to fall apart, and that creates some other ripple effect. So we don't have the same Clippers team. We have a Thunder team that might be more of a contender right now. We have the Raptors, who would be, I mean, they're already, I'm sure that Raptors fans listening to this think they're a contender in the East, but they would be possibly the favorites in the East right now. And the whole landscape of the league would be different.
Do you think that it's a foregone conclusion that if Kyle, so let's say Kawhi comes back, is it a foregone conclusion that all the other pieces come back? Because I think like Kyle Lowry gets this 1 year, $30 million extension that he signs after winning the title. But before that, it's like Lowry has sort of been one of those names that's on the block seemingly for forever. And especially if they're not coming off of a title, could that be something where like maybe Masai picks up the phone and maybe they're the ones that do the Chris Paul trade and they flip Kyle Lowry for Chris Paul. And then maybe now it's Chris Paul and Kawhi Leonard playing together in Toronto. Like, Is there a world in which Kawhi Leonard is back, but everyone else is maybe not?
Kyle Lowry would definitely be that domino, though, right? Because there's no way they're trading OG, Siakam, Fred VanVleet. I feel like all those guys, just because of their contracts, how young they are, how important they are to the future of the franchise, they're probably all still around. But it's probably Lowry. I mean, maybe it's Ibaka and one of Gasol as well. I mean, even coming into this season, we kind of asked if they were going to still be on the team by the trade deadline, just because at the time they all had one-year contracts, or 1 year remaining on their contract, which made them, you know, candidates to be traded. I don't know. It's funny when thinking back about Lowry, just how much him winning the title changed the narrative with his career and everything. Because I feel like people were already saying he was probably the greatest Raptor of all time before winning the championship last year, but him winning the championship solidifies that. Like, there's no doubt anymore. And then we're also talking about him potentially being a Hall of Famer and everything like that. So it really is incredible how much, like, his reputation changed based on them winning that championship. I realize I just didn't really answer your question. So
I'm That's nothing. You not answering a question on a podcast. I'm stunned.
I mean, first of all, sorry, Raptors fans, but hearing the fact that Kyle Lowry is being thought of as a probable Hall of Famer is still crazy to me. I still can't get that fully through my mind. I mean, you could probably thank Mitch Richmond for that and a couple other guys who lowered the whole bar for the Hall of Fame. I mean, Kyle Lowry is not a Hall of Fame player, and maybe has had 2 or 3 years in his career that could even sniff some other Hall of Famers that are currently in there. But I don't think we have to get into that right now. I see Mike is shaking his head, so maybe he agrees with me. But
I agree. I emphatically agree.
I cringe when I hear that. You agree? Okay. But anyway, yeah. I mean, to your point, I don't think Masai is a guy that stands pat. He doesn't get complacent. So if they lost, I think he's making a move. And I think Scott, you're right. I think he's training Lowry. And I mean, Chris Paul would make a lot of sense there if they could. They probably have to throw in another piece, or maybe not, because Paul's making an extra 10 mil. So maybe they'd actually get a piece back. But yeah, I'm sure Masai's making moves after bringing back Kawhi.
So let's then play it differently, where they lose, but then Kawhi is still gone. Kawhi bounces, and we sort of go down the path that Scott started to, with Kawhi goes to the Clippers, and then Paul George does too, and then there's still the Russell Westbrook trade, and everything that plays out. There's no way that, I think there was even some noise and speculation that coming off the title, defending a championship, that Toronto would blow it up anyway and not for rebuild. In my mind, there's zero doubt that if they were not coming off a title, that this team would have been hitting the reset button, right? With Lowry, Gasol, Ibaka, all on expiring deals. Where would those pieces have been most likely to land, do you think? Like, what are the kind of trades that would have been out there for Kyle Lowry, for Marcus Gasol, for Serge Ibaka? What would the Toronto Raptors have looked like today if that shot doesn't go in?
Yeah, that's a tough question, because I feel like even going into this trade deadline, it was kind of hard to find destinations for Gasol and Ibaka just because they were making so much money. Lowry would have definitely gotten the biggest package for them in return, just because he's a guy who can basically play on any team, because he can play with and without the ball in his hands. He's a good passer, good shooter, can create some offense for himself. The one team that just sticks out to me is the Miami Heat, because they've been mentioned to Lowry before, and they just seem such a natural destination for him. And they have a bunch of young guys they could have traded to the Raptors, plus some contracts. You know, like Justice Winslow's contract is a star, and then you add guys like Tyler Herro and things like that. Maybe that's an enticing package for Toronto to surround a young guy, or Siakam around with younger guys or something like that. Philly's another option. You know, maybe they decide they want a more traditional point guard to pair with Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, if he's still on the team in that situation. So those are the two teams that come to mind immediately for me for like a Lowry trade package.
What about OKC? I mean, he might be a more attractive piece for OKC than Chris Paul, just because he had the shorter contract and a contract with, as we said, $10 million less on it. They wouldn't have had to take as much of a hit there. So that could have been a perfect piece, actually, if Masai thought Westbrook was an upgrade over Lowry and wanted to take on his salary, which I don't think he is either.
No.
There's no way Masai. There's no, way Masai goes for Russ. There's no way. No way.
You don't think it's a team with like Russ and Siakam would scare the crap out of some people in the East?
They'd lose in the first round because Russ would take 40 shots and make 10 of them. I agree. They're not. Masai is not trading for
the
Russ.
The two biggest.
But like OKC is an interesting situation for Lowry, but I just don't know. I don't think he'd trade for Russ.
What about, so I, Novik, you threw out the idea of Philly, or maybe it was, I don't know. I don't even know who's throwing out. Scott, you threw out the idea of Philly. What is there a world in which, so like, let's say Philly says, you know what? We're done. We're done like messing around. We lost to the Bucks in the conference finals after getting by the Raptors. And we saw Ben Simmons just fall apart again. Is there a world in which Masai like can flip Lowry and Siakam for Ben Simmons?
Ooh, both of them. Nah.
Nah?
I thought if you were gonna say like Lowry, some package of, if you were saying some package for Lowry for Simmons and find some way to put that together, then like maybe. I don't think Masai trades Siakam and Lowry for Simmons. There's no way. I feel like Simmons is just too awkward of a fit. Like, it's too unnatural of a fit. Like, you really have to build a team around him to maximize his potential and get the best
that's
out
what
of him.
Right? That's exactly what they
and
would
sure,
be doing,
like,
though.
They could do that. But I also think that the difference between like Siakam ceiling, like where Siakam is right now and Ben Simmons is right now, is not that different to the point where like you need to really blow up your team to get Simmons.
But no one knew that. You can't be sure of that going into the season, because Siakam took a massive leap to even be in the same conversation as Simmons this year. Going in, it's more palatable. What would you say? Would you say OG and Lowry would you do that if you're Philly? Maybe with get a draft pick too?
I mean, that would be a pretty nasty defensive team, though. Lowry, OG, Embiid, just those three. I mean, I like that for Philly. That's like a more natural lineup when you have those guys rather than Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, because we've talked about this plenty of times before. Ultimately, as good as Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid are together, they're probably better off on separate teams, just because they're not natural fits together.
So I kind of want to transition into... I agree. I don't know. I think that there's just something to be said for... Man, that's a lot to turn down. Like, if you're Masai and you look and you take truth serum and you say, man, like, Ben Simmons gives us another like championship ceiling guy, and he doesn't know Pascal's going to get there, even if it takes losing Pascal and Kyle Lowry to get that done. I don't know. That one's intriguing to me. But I do want to talk about Pascal Siakam, because...
Wait, they didn't even trade Siakam for Kawhi, though.
Yeah, I understand. I know.
Okay.
What? No, so you're bristling. So come back at me then.
No, I'm just saying, like, if the Raptors aren't trading Siakam for Kawhi Leonard, they're not going to do it for Ben Simmons. They're not.
But it wasn't just Siakam. It was DeMar DeRozan and Siakam.
Yeah, but you're telling me it's Kyle Lowry and Siakam.
Yeah, but you're also getting, so you're also getting 4 years of Ben Simmons, not a 1 year rental of Kawhi Leonard coming off of a 9-game season and no one knows if he's even going to play. There's a really big difference.
People defending Ben Simmons.
I know.
Now.
I don't know what the hell the world's coming to.
Could you imagine, by the way, if they... I forgot that was something that was proposed, that they wouldn't throw Siakam in the Kawhi deal. But imagine if the Spurs just managed to get Siakam before he turned into a star, and just another guy that the Spurs pulled out of nowhere to become a star would make them, you know, extend Popovich's playoff streak by another 15 years.
It would have been the most. It's like Masai outspurred the Spurs and not giving them an unproven Siakam. But I do so.
Yeah.
In thinking about Siakam, so like obviously he has, and he's you know the most improved player last year. Certainly has his moments, but I think we can agree that like he really, his coming out party was the NBA Finals, right? Particularly Game 1 and Game 6, where he's awesome. Right, like he's one of the best players on the floor. To me, in my eyes, like that's when he earned that 4-year, $130 million contract that he signed. Scott, I'll start with you. Do you think that, you know, if there is no conference finals, if there is no NBA finals, there's no evidence of Siakam sort of doing that on this stage, particularly, you know, had they lost in Philly, like he wasn't exactly that impressive in that series, certainly not in that final game. Are we sure that Siakam is either still in Toronto? Is he signing a max? Like, what does his future look like if that shot doesn't go in?
So I think he's still in Toronto. I don't think that he signs the extension before this season. I think that's more of a situation, because they could have just waited and see how he played the season before giving him an extension. But they did come to that extension before the season. I think if they lose, they just don't do that, and they wait and see how he plays this season before signing him to a 4 or 5 year max or whatever it is. The thing for me is that I think that second round series against Philly exposed the biggest weakness in Pascal Siakam's game, because the whole series changed when they put Joel Embiid on him and he couldn't hit a jump shot that basically wasn't in the corner set up by someone else. So I think because of that series, even if they lose, I think that's a waking up call for him to work on that part of his game. And I still think he doesn't become, you know, the exact player that he is today, because I don't know, he rides the momentum that he played in the finals and that's helped him become the player he is. But I do think he takes another leap, just because of the way, like, the lessons that he learns from that series.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about him getting motivated. I don't know if the Raptors winning that game 7 and then having 2 more series for Siakam actually was a factor in getting that extension, because he really didn't play that well. I mean, he struggled in the Bucks series, barely shot 40%, 14 points a game, and he wasn't exactly lights out in the finals. He was pretty inconsistent. Game 1 he was awesome, but for the series he shot around 27% from 3. He played well, 19-6, but he wasn't like the star or anywhere near the star that he is now. And I don't know if there was just enough from those 2 series where they were like, all right, this is our guy, we're giving him the extension. I think they kind of knew, based on his progression over the last couple of years all along, that he had an upward trajectory.
I think besides getting him out of there,
really?
I do. There's two different versions here, right? There's the one version where it's like, hey, Kawhi comes back, but it's a, we got to win at all costs. In which case, all right, we'll mortgage out Siakam for a sure thing. Because even when they signed him, he was not a sure thing, right? So if Kawhi's not there, and then you're going to just start building a team around Siakam when there's not really proof yet that he can kind of do the things that we've now seen him do. I don't know. Is that not an opportunity to, before investing that much money in somebody like that, couldn't that sort of been a way to reset on the fly? Or is there no need to, because that's who you're resetting with, I guess?
Go ahead, Alex.
I was just going to comment on how Micah said that. You said, we've now seen him do. When you say that, you're just talking about 2 games in the finals. I mean, the other four games, he was okay. And in the Bucks series, he struggled. So I don't know if you haven't seen him do that in those two playoff series, is my point. Not enough for Masai to be like, all right, he's our guy now. I think he had already thought that before the series, or probably before even the playoffs. And then even in his mind, if you trade him, if he does think that Siakam has upside, then you're trading him, you know, 10 cents on the dollar. You're not trading him at his full value. So I don't know. I don't know if he's just about to trade him at that point.
I also think that, like, even if Kawhi stays, Siakam is kind of an ideal number 2 next to a guy like that. I mean, Michael, we've talked about this a lot before in terms of, like, what's the best role for Siakam? Can he be the number 1 option on a championship team, or is he ideally a number 2 next to someone like Kawhi Leonard? Because he's an excellent finisher in transition, can get to the basket, post up a little bit, hit threes, is comfortable playing off ball, and then this season is the first time we've really seen him be a number 1 option. So when you think of, like, how good he is as a number 2 and how little he's getting paid this season because his extension hasn't kicked in yet, I do sort of think that, I know what you're saying, because, like, he's probably going to get he'd be their best chance to get a good return, right?
Right.
And build a new team around Kawhi if he stays. But I just think, because of how good of a fit he is and how little money he made, I just think they stick with
him. Here's a question. How good would they keep Siakam, but Kyle Lowry's gone, Marc Gasol's gone, Serge Ibaka's gone. How good is a Raptors team with basically trade assets you get back plus Siakam. Like, because the reason I ask is, like, Masai from day one, quite literally in Toronto, has always wanted to rebuild. So is there a way in which, like, okay, if I keep Siakam, I'm going to be too good to really rebuild in the way that I want to rebuild? Because you're already paying him top max dollar. He might be too good to where the point that you're not in the play, you're not in the running to get, you know, a number one, number two pick in the draft type thing. So, and especially coming off of a summer in which we saw what the Lakers or what the Clippers got for Paul George. We saw what the Lakers got out of the Pelicans for Anthony Davis. If you're Masai, do you maybe look at it and say, you know what, Siakam's going to get us to a point in the East where we're not good enough to really do anything. We're too good to really get anything of value. So we're better off just trying to see what we can get for him and, like, really, really going for the full tank.
But then are you trading, like, Fred VanVleet and OG Anunoby and stuff like that too? Because I feel like even, obviously, this team is far superior if they have Pascal Siakam, but I feel like even if you have those guys and mix in pieces around them, they're still going to be competitive because those guys are, one, really good, and they play really hard.
You think if Fred VanVleet is the best player on your team, you're a competitive team?
I'm not saying they're going to win 45, 50 games, but I still think they're going to be good enough to the point where they're not, like, winning 15 games and they have the best odds to win the lottery. They're still going to be, like, I still think they're going to be competitive on a night-to-night basis where they're, like, in games and they can mess around and win 25-30. You don't?
If Fred VanVleet is the best player on your team, you're not sniffing anywhere near
22
games.
I didn't say that. I didn't say that. I said if you have, like, Fred VanVleet, you have guys like OG Anunoby, Norman Powell, you bring all those guys back and then you mix in, because you're getting something in return for Pascal Siakam. You're not just trading him for a draft pick. So you're getting guys around them. I think that team is decent enough where you're not, like, bottoming out and you're one of the worst teams in the East.
I agree. Can we just, I don't want to shift gears too much, but you brought up VanVleet. If there's anyone that, we're talking about Siakam, but if there's anyone that gained more from the Raptors, that shot bouncing in, the Raptors advancing, it's VanVleet. Because that dude was, I was looked up his numbers in the first two series up until that shot. He was averaging 4 points a game in the through 12 playoff games, shooting 27.6%. He was nothing. He was non-existent. All the goodwill he had built up over playing, having a pretty solid season, he was gone. He was out of the minds of Raptors fans as anyone who's probably going to factor in too much of their future. I know he had a distraction. His wife was pregnant. That's very valid. But he was not. He was a non-factor. And then all of a sudden, he turns into Steph Curry the last two series, completely revives his reputation, and now he's starting and putting up big time numbers for a team that might win 60 games. I mean, the flip that guy went through is probably even bigger than Siakam and anyone else really that benefited from Kawhi's shot going in.
That shot's going to be like a $50 million swing for Fred VanVleet, right? Like he's going to get like 4 for 80 or 4 for 90 and like he wasn't coming. I mean, he wasn't going to get half of that, right?
I think so. I think you're right, because even if he plays well this season, right? Like if they lose in that game 7, he comes into the season and he has the same season that he's having. All people are going to be saying is that, yeah, but he choked in the playoffs the year before. So we have to see him bring it in the playoffs before we commit like big money to him. But the fact that, you know, as you're saying, Alex, he goes off in that Bucks series, he plays well in the finals. He defends Steph really well. He plays well offensively. He gets a finals MVP vote. I think you're absolutely, absolutely right in saying that helped his, That's going to earn him a few more dollars down the line.
All right. Well, look, all this was fun because it's fun to just look back at history and think about how things might have been different had they gone down differently. But they didn't go down differently. Kawhi Leonard made that shot. So I want to put both of you guys on the spot to wrap it up here, knowing full well that Kawhi hits that shot. Yet another dagger, two-time finals MVP. You're Nick Nurse, or you're the coach of any mythical team, and you could draft anybody in the current league, down one, 30 seconds left. You get any player, not just in the league today, in NBA history, are you taking Kawhi Leonard?
Wait. You're asking me.
Let's, all time. Off the rails.
I'm taking
all time.
And I'm taking one a player guy. To make a shot to win a game?
Yes.
It's Jordan. What are we doing here?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like, have you seen the one thing everyone's been talking about for the last 2 months with no sports going on? It's Michael Jordan in The Last Dance.
I've been watching the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. Okay. So in the league today, so maybe that's a little bit too hot. Maybe it is still Michael Jordan. In the league today, is Kawhi, did that shot vault Kawhi to a level where he is unanimously like alpha dog number one guy you most want game on the line?
Yeah, I think so. I'd go with that. I just think when you're looking for a guy who can create a shot with him at the end of a shot clock, to me, he's someone I'm most confident is going to get a good shot for himself. Because one thing I don't think that gets talked enough about the finals in particular is just how well he was able to get to the free throw line. Like, he's a guy, whenever the Raptors struggled on offense, he could just barrel his way to the basket and either, you know, get a layup or a dunk, or he's going to the free throw line for two free throws. So I just think when you put it all together, a guy who can hit pull-up threes, mid-range, super strong, score on the post and all that, I just think he's probably the most complete isolation scorer in the league. So yeah, he'd get my vote.
I think I'm gonna flip it on you guys and go with our boy Jokic. Wow. I mean, that guy. How many game winners has that guy? Did that guy hit this season? At least three or four, right?
And Alex, he proved. You're not gonna take
no
Jokic
way.
Over
there's
Kawhi.
There's no way I'm taking you seriously.
Come on.
I mean, I've seen him do it. I've seen he had three or four game winners this season. Can't think of the game specifically. He played really well in the playoffs last year. I think he's got ice in his veins. I think if you're putting me on the spot, all right? I mean, I'm gonna go to the well, the guy we always hype up off air, and that's Jokic. I'm going with Jokic.
I cannot wait for if basketball returns, we get Clippers Nuggets Western Conference Finals. 2 men in or only one can leave between Nikola Jokic and Kawhi. I'm also going Kawhi. I think I would have picked Kawhi even prior to that shot going in. Like, he was the best player. He was the best clutch player in the NBA the entire all of last season. Getting buckets in big moments is nothing new for him. But I do think that shot was like a real, like one of those vivid moments where all of a sudden, like, okay, like, he's the guy now. And I know, like, Giannis won the MVP and was probably going to win the MVP again this year. But I think kind of one of the, one of the things that we're losing out on right now, we'd be in the middle of the playoffs and we'd be kind of like, we'd be staring down the barrel of potentially Lakers Clippers here starting in like, what, a week? And that would have been maybe like the most hyped LeBron versus Kawhi series in a long time. That's not a final series, right?
So I'll ask a question this time around. We've talked about literally everyone else on the Raptors and how it impacts them. So if Kawhi's shot doesn't fall, what does that change for him? Not I'm not even talking like, does he stay, does he go? I'm talking more from like a legacy perspective.
Well, so what I was going to say, if the shot doesn't go in, like you guys, like you said, Micah, he doesn't have that reputation solidified as the guy. He doesn't go on to win the title. I think we haven't brought this scenario up yet, but he might then be much more likely to go team up with LeBron and play for the Lakers. Because maybe he's thinking, man, maybe I do need some big-time help to go win a title. Maybe I need LeBron. Maybe I need to be that number two guy and really solidify my chances of winning a title if he's not feeling as confident from hitting that shot and then leading the Raptors to the chip. I mean, it's very possible he's sitting there with LeBron instead of AD, or maybe all three of them.
It's all three of them, right?
Yeah, it's all three. And the thing for him, too, he'd be playing with house money because it's like he's already won one championship with the Spurs. He won finals MVP. Like that, I feel like that was like a jumping off point for his career. And then if he ends up winning five championships because he teamed up with LeBron and AD, like that alone, regardless of how well he plays, if he's number one on that team, number two, whatever, like he's going to go down as one of like a top 15 at least player of all time probably.
How kind of crazy is it that like if the shot doesn't go in, Kawhi goes plays with LeBron and AD, that team just, they would be untouchable. But then we have this suspended season. We're not going to sit here and say like coronavirus wouldn't have happened if Kawhi's shot didn't go in. But, right. But sort of like there's already all these unanswered questions. The whole, like, LeBron, Kawhi, AD not getting a chance to win a title in year one would have been absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, it would have. It absolutely would have.
I mean, how would you put that against against KD, Steph, Clay, and Draymond? If you know, if that trio did, obviously not this year, but if that trio did come together, would you put them in, as against the all-time teams as those other four?
You kind of have to, right? You're gonna go the other way, aren't you?
No. Look, I think star power wise, there's no doubt, right? But I think when you look at, like, I can't sit here and say confidently that, like, LeBron, Kawhi, and AD are going to fit in perfectly if they play together. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know that Steph, Clay, and Draymond, their skills complement each other so well on both ends of the court that it's not going to gel as well between them. And I think probably they probably end up making it work. They do. I just think it's just a far more natural fit with Steph, Clay, and Draymond, which is why I don't think it's like a no-brainer, although I probably would just still lean towards LeBron, Kawhi, and AD just because the star power is ridiculous.
They'd be the best. It's the they're the best big three ever if they do that, right? Like, there's not, yes, it's not close, which automatically then enters them into the conversation for greatest team. I think they'd be better. Like, I know that, like, that those Warriors teams, like, just played in a way that made more sense and it all fit like a perfect puzzle, but, like, there's, like, a legitimate argument that that those are the three best guys in the league, like, right?
And
three
from
of the,
a,
three of the top five.
Yeah. And from, but from a physical dominance and physical talent standpoint, they get the edge. Like, Clay and Draymond and even Steph, like, are not, like, you know, athletic freaks or just, like, they're freaks in their skill set. But, like, you know what I mean? Like Kawhi, LeBron, and AD are just absolute monsters. Athletically, strength-wise, things they can do with the ball at their size.
You know, it's scary.
Yeah, you're right.
What would have been fun is if, like, so say the three of them joined up this season. Like, so he misses a shot, Kawhi goes to the Lakers, they play, and we still have, like, a suspended season with no resolution. Nobody wins the title. I wonder, like, what would have been then, like, what's, like, the super team that forms this summer to, like, play against those guys? Because, like, the only team that I can think of that would have even had a prayer physically is Philly, right? Like, there's nobody else that even is remotely in the ballpark in terms of just being able to just stack up mano a mano with all three of those guys.
I mean, I think we would all agree that the only team that can really match up with the Lakers in the West right now is the Clippers. And Kawhi is obviously a huge reason for that. And then if Kawhi goes to the Lakers, then Paul George might not go to the Clippers. And then suddenly that's just not even an option. So they probably steamroll their way through the West. And then you're right, you know, Philly's probably their best option physically to match up with them, but there's also no guarantee that Philly's going to make it out of the East.
It would have to be the only teams that could hypothetically come together and match up with that team would be if Giannis went somewhere and teamed up with an already
Golden
great
State
duo. If he went to Golden State or if he went to Houston or even Philly or something, it would take a Giannis.
Yeah.
A Giannis KD type move, which we don't support here on this podcast, but it would take that sort of move to defeat that trio.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
It is fun. So there we have it. We've decided that if Kawhi's shot didn't go in, let LeBron's career would be entirely different. It all comes back to LeBron.
It does, no matter how you do it.
Of course. Well, happy anniversary, Kawhi Leonard. 1 year ago today, the greatest moment in Raptors history. Aside from actually winning the title, the shot to beat Philadelphia in Game 7. For Micah Adams, Alec Novick, and Scott Rafferty, thanks for checking us out here on Raptors Pod Table. We'll see you next time.
Get that garbage out of here!